I took the milk jug back to the larder and called over my shoulder, "Well, I don't see why it should, considering Rose is in love with him." "Is she?" said Father. And when I stayed in the larder, hoping he would let the subject drop, he called me back. "Are you sure she's in love with him, Cassandra? I'd be interested to know." I said, "Well, she told me she was, and you know how truthful she is." He thought for a minute and then said, "You're right. I can't remember her ever telling a lie. Truthfulness so often goes with ruthlessness. Yes, yes, if she says she's in love, she is. And her manner last night was quite compatible with it, given Rose's nature." He put down his empty glass so I was able to take it to the sink and keep my back to him. "What was her manner like?" I asked. "So damned unresponsive, and so obviously sure of her power over him." I managed to say, "Oh, I'm sure things will turn out right," then concentrated on the glass. I never dried a glass so thoroughly in my life. Father started off to the gatehouse again, to my great relief. As he passed, he said, "Glad we've had this talk. It's eased my mind considerably." It hadn't eased mine. I suppose I ought to have been pleased at hearing him talking so rationally, but I was much too submerged in my own troubles, for that was when misery engulfed me, and guilt too. Everything he said about Simon's feelings for Rose was such agony that I suddenly knew it wasn't only the wonderful luxury of being in love that had been buoying me up. Deep down, in some vague mixed way, I'd been letting myself hope that he didn't really care for her, that it was me he loved, and that kissing me would have made him realize it. The next morning, the weight on my heart was the worst I had ever known. It didn't move at all while I got our breakfasts, and by the time Stephen and Thomas had gone, and Father had shut himself in the gatehouse, it was so bad that I found myself going round leaning against walls. I can't think why misery makes me lean against walls, but it does. I didn't feel like crying. I wanted to shriek. So I ran out into the rain in an empty field a long way from anywhere and screamed blue murder, and then felt quite extraordinarily silly and so very wet. I had a sudden desire to be sitting with the kind vicar by his fire, and as I was almost halfway to Godsend as the crow flies, I went on scrambling through hedges and ditches. And then, when I arrived at the vicarage, there was no one in. "Shall I crawl into the church and wait?" I wondered, coming down the streaming garden path. But just then, Mrs. Jakes called across from the quays that the vicar and his housekeeper were shopping in King's Crypt and wouldn't be home until the evening. I ran over and asked if she would trust me for the price of a glass of port. She laughed and said she couldn't legally sell me a drink before 12 o'clock, but she would give me one as a present. I sat up at the bar, drinking my port, and all the time my wet hair kept dripping down my back inside my dress. However, by the time I finished the port, I was less violently miserable. I just felt lumpish, and my eyes kept getting fixed on things. I found myself staring at the bottles of creme de menthe and cherry brandy that Rose and I had our drinks out of on May Day. And suddenly, I felt the most bitter hatred for Rose's green creme de menthe and a deep affection for my ruby cherry brandy. I went to the kitchen door and put my head round. "Please, Mrs. Jakes," I called, "can I have a cherry brandy? It's striking 12 now, so I can owe you for it without breaking the law." She came and got it for me, and after I'd drunk it, I went home. When I got home, the castle was completely deserted. Even Ab and Hal were out. I felt guilty because they had had no dinner, and called them, but they didn't come. My voice sounded despairing, and I suddenly felt lonelier than I ever remember feeling, and more deeply sad. I sat on the bedroom window seat staring woodenly at Miss Blossom.